Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back to our first NICE workshop for 2020, when we're discussing romances and relationships in the four novels selected this year.
Lori, I think, is attracted to women who have a spark.
Yes.
Joe definitely is a firecracker of a gal. Mm-hmm. And Amy is the most like her in many ways. But what Amy has that we see in a few chapters that never get movie adaptations. Like when Amy and Joe go like visiting socially, and Amy's very good and very polished, and Joe just messes up everywhere and is not afraid of offending people. Refuses to conform, which mm-hmm. ultimately costs her her trip to Europe mm-hmm. because she refuses to be polished and well mannered. And then there's another chapter where Amy is like part of some sort of a social fair mm-hmm. and has to kind of to smooth those community relationships.
Yeah.
That Amy does have that sort of social polish that a guy like Lori is going to need in his adult life.
Exactly.
He's a partner with those skills that mm-hmm. Joe just doesn't have, nor does she want to have.
Right. And he doesn't want Joe to change. And Amy also has a spark of... I don't know what you want, independence and strength.
Absolutely.
You know, she's the one, when he's like, you know, feeling sorry for himself because Joe doesn't want to marry him, you know, and he's misbehaving in Europe, shall we say, at college, misbehaving. And Amy's the one who, you know, kind of rakes him over the coals in no uncertain terms and lectures him into being a better person, being a better man, you know, grow up. And she has some strength in her, founded in her family and their experiences and not, you know, of poverty and different things. She has some strength that he admires very much. And it's clear in certain scenes between them in the book that he admires that about her. Mm-hmm. And so I think they have all the good ingredients in the pot of stew going into making, you know, their marriage and their romance one that I feel like, you know, from the mature point of view that I have now, at least, is very plausible and is actually a very healthy, functional relationship. I can see why they're the winner. They're the winner of our poll. And, yeah.
And I think it's important to keep in mind also that Little Women was written in two parts.
Mm-hmm.
The first part was called Little Women, and then the publisher wanted more, mm-hmm. so really pushed Alcott to write a sequel that brings the girls into adulthood and married life. And Alcott talks continually about how sick she gets of the fan letters about how Joe should marry Lori, so
yeah.
she had to fabricate Friedrich Bear.
Yeah.
Whom I believe is based on Henry David Thoreau.
Okay.
Because Alcott clearly had a crush on Thoreau.
Yes.
she had once said of him, a kiss from him would last you your entire life.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, she was just absolutely enamored with the man.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to marry Joe off.
Right.
Initially, and she definitely didn't want to marry him to Lori. So, as she's pairing off the girls, at the request of the publisher and her many fans in The Good Wives, which is the second part of Little Women, she had to find a necessary and plausible pairing for Amy.
Yeah.
And so I think all of the parts are there. It's just because of the fact that she wasn't necessarily intending to take the plot that far.
Right. I agree, because doesn't the second half of the novel, which would have been the second publication, a separate book, start like 4 years after the first part?
Right.
So
right.
You're right. They go from kind of like...
Right.
early teens, if you will, to then in the second part of the book, they're in their late teens, early 20s, depending on which character you're talking about, and going into marriages, and even Meg has children in that book. So, I should say she got married and had children. She didn't just have children. let's be accurate.
So just from a structural standpoint, it's a little surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look back at the first part, it does make sense. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a tiny bit jarring in the same way that, forgive me for referencing a book that isn't one of the four, but Catherine having a baby in Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, that always jarred me
that
too.
Suddenly, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's had a baby and there was no mention of the pregnancy, but that was part of the social mores of the time,
sure,
that you don't talk about pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a little bit of, whoa, where did that come from? But it's not necessarily, it's not implausible. It's just a little surprising. But she really plays it very well, because Joe and, well, the rest of the family are very clearly shocked at this turn of events,
mm-hmm,
but in a pleasant way.
Yeah, I don't think Marmy's shocked about
good
Amy
point.
And Lori. I think Marmy saw that coming. We don't know that she saw it coming, but the way she talks to Joe about it after Amy and Lori have come home after Beth has passed away,
yeah,
and they come home from their honeymoon and announce that they've been married and all that. That's a one. Oh, those are all fun scenes and everything. But when Joe's feeling a little down after that, because she's feeling, you know, her sister Beth, her dearest Beth, has died. You know, Lori, her best friend, has married her sister. Her sister, you know, both her sisters are married and have lives of their own. She's feeling a little bereft and very vulnerable. And the conversation that she and Marmy have, I think, throughout those chapters, they have, I think, one or two conversations. I think Marmy was not shocked by Amy and Lori's relationship blossoming into love and then marriage. I think she was concerned how Joe might take it. I mean, that she explicitly asks her, are you okay with this, you know? And,
yeah,
and which,
yeah,
immediately tells the reader,
yep,
that she is okay with it, Marmy. But that she's worried about her daughter, Joe, and wonders if she's okay with it. So I think that Louisa May Alcott did a great job of answering that challenge of her public and her publisher, and coming up with a relationship. The only choice for Lori, if he couldn't have Joe, had to be Amy. There was no one else. And so to give him, a happy romantic relationship, to give Amy one, you know, after, you know, we've fallen in love with those characters and seen them grow up, and then to bring in Professor Bear for Joe, I mean, Louisa May Alcott did a pretty incredible feat of writing with all of those storylines, I think. That's what I've always thought.
Yeah, you made an interesting comment the other day, Alice, about how the authors had done such a good job really making us buy into them as people.
Yes.
You want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think we were talking, what I mentioned was, in years past, we've always had our four choices. We've always found common themes, thematic elements, whatever. And in this year, you know, we've done that too with this year. We have several themes that we feel like are overarching all four books. But to me, as we've gone through these deep discussions behind the scenes in our podcast, you and I feel like probably for me, the greatest common theme is the talent, and I mean the ability to write well, of these authors. These four authors have created characters that are eternal. They're timeless. We love them. We hate them. We identify with parts of them. We're disgusted by other parts of them, whatever. But we know these characters. And they've created stories, the actual novels, the way the storytelling flows is remarkably well done for all the characters, all the relationships, all the happenings, if you will, in each of these stories. They are remarkable books in that regard. And I kind of just wanted to give a shout out to the talent, the writing talent of these incredible authors of these four books. They're just, I mean, I made the joke with you, Sarah E., the other day when we were talking about this. I was like, of course, I want to write the great American novel, and I've sat down to try to write that novel several times, and I give up because of books like this. Books like these books tell me I'm not that good, you know. I can't write, you know, I'm not going to write the characters, you know, that are going to last forever and you know, and the stories that are going to haunt us in the middle of the night and stuff. So, you know, huge applause and commendations to these four authors. They've done an amazing job. And I think the stuff that Spike was saying about Amy and Lori and Louisa May Alcott bringing in Professor Bear to kind of round off Joe's life, if you will, is dead on. I mean, and she did those challenging things to her story, to her characters, in really, 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 really amazingly well-written ways, I think. That's my mm-hmm. shout-out to the authors.
Yeah, I think that all three of us have related very intensely to characters from these books.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would love to, because I see we only have about 10 minutes remaining, talk a little bit about Melanie and Ashley from Gone with the Wind. Yes. And why they may make a good couple, and I'm curious about thoughts from everyone on why they may not make a good couple. Okay. I mean, they won an award here for what, tied for second?
Well, tied for second, I guess you could say. Dracula and Jonathan, I don't know if we're going to have time in our 10 minutes to talk about them, but let's definitely hit on Melanie and Ashley. Spike, do you have thoughts on, you know, their relationship as being a healthy and functional one? Or not? I guess we could throw them into that category too.
I honestly have to admit I haven't read that one yet.
Okay. Well, I will jump right in then. Or maybe, Sarah E., did you want to jump in first?
Sure. I mean, my thoughts on that is, of all the characters in that book, they probably are best suited for each
mm-hmm,
other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think that Melanie is loyal to Ashley from beginning to end, and I think that some of his character flaws she smooths out. She makes sure on her dying bed that mm-hmm. he has what he needs to survive after her. Spoiler alert, I should have said that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Ashley is an okay match for her. Mm-hmm. He is loyal to a point. He has what one might call an emotional affair, although it's more physical than emotional. He just doesn't act on the physical.
Right.
I'm not quite sure how one would term that. It's a fantasy affair, but nothing actually takes place. But because he's always entertaining the, oh, what if that I could get it on with Scarlett, he's always entertaining that somewhere in his mind. It takes him till the end of the book to really realize that what's that beautiful quote about, you know, Melanie's the one dream that never let me down or something.
Right, that never died. In the face of reality, basically, is what he was saying.
Yeah. So, I think they are functional. I think they do an okay job. But I think, like any real relationship, there are some flaws, too.
Yeah.
I agree. What are your thoughts, Ellis?
I agree. And I do want to say that in our behind-the-scenes discussions, you and I will get a little bit more into Joe and Professor Bear and mm-hmm. even Jonathan and Mina from Dracula. We have thoughts and things to share with the public on that, but just not in the workshop today. For Melanie and Ashley, when I was a child and first read Gone with the Wind, which I read the book before I ever saw the movie, and I probably read the book when I was between 7 or 8 years old, which was crazy, but I did. I loved them. I just thought they were, well, I wanted to be Melanie until she died. Then I was like, okay, I don't want to be Melanie anymore. But I mean, I loved Melanie so much, and I thought that she and Ashley were so perfect and blah, blah, blah. And so age, you know, as I got older through my teens and my 20s and my 30s and my 40s and my 50s, rereading the book and all that stuff, my opinion of them changed a little bit. Because as you grow and mature yourself and go through experiences, you begin to see flaws in these fictional characters, of course, that, you know, Margaret Mitchell drew from, you know, her own experiences and everything. So these characters are so real in that they have real flaws, right? And Melanie loves Ashley the way Melanie loves Scarlett. Once she decides she loves that person, they can do no wrong. She is their 100% support, she will, to the point of being an enabler, you could say, but she will never see the bad in them, at least publicly, or any weakness in them publicly. She may see that. She may see Scarlett's flaws. She may see and understand Ashley's weaknesses and his flaws. But they do not, those flaws do not change how she feels about those people. She loves them unconditionally. And she does that to her dying breath. I mean, she betrays Ashley in just the slightest bit when she asks Scarlett to take care of him, because she knows he can't take care of himself. But she also knows that Scarlett already knows that. So she's not really betraying him. That's a sister, you know, best friend, deathbed conversation she's having with Scarlett about her son and her husband, and saying, take care of them for me. And so I feel like from Melanie's point of view, she has unconditional love for Ashley despite his flaws. Ashley's a little harder to, you know, kind of feel positive about for me, because he's just such a weak character across the board. As a grown-up adult, I'm just like, oh, Lord, you know. And I do understand that in the novel, there are moments where he tries very hard to be noble, to be the best man he can be. He just can't ever quite follow through on that, mostly because he gives in to the pressures of Scarlett or Melanie or whoever, or just life in general. He just never quite achieves the nobility that I think he wishes he had. And so that's what I feel about Melanie and Ashley. I think they probably deserve the number two tie here, because they do have a supportive relationship and a loving relationship. It is flawed. I would say it's at least as flawed as Dracula and Jonathan's relationship. You know, maybe not quite so flawed as theirs, but, you know, Jonathan and Dracula's relationship has so many flaws. We'll have to do a podcast episode on that, you know. But you know, that's my take on that as we wind down this workshop's session and get ready to go into our next one.
Great.
Oh, I did want to ask before we do that, if you, Sarah E., Spike, have you guys been working on any creative inspired pieces from, you know, these four books that we chose this year? And I'll just tell you, I've been working on a portrait of one of the characters from one of our books. I'm not going to reveal who it is yet, because if the portrait fails, I'm not a portrait painter. So this is a very scary portrait that I'm painting, scary for myself as an artist, but I'm working on it. So that's what I've been working on. But I just wonder if you guys have had any, been working on anything.
You can go ahead, Spike.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah. I've been working for several years on a stage adaptation of Little Women.
Awesome.
Considering that it's my favorite novel of all time.
Woohoo!
So for me, the stakes are pretty high, but I wanted to ramp it up, not just because you guys are doing Little Women this year, but because I saw the Greta Gerwig version, the film, and I just, while I thought it was extremely well acted, I didn't like it.
Okay.
There were problems with taking it, with taking things out of order.
Yeah, I had that same problem too. You'll have to join us when we talk about adaptations and go into more details about what you thought of that movie, because I have a feeling that you and I had a lot of the same kind of reactions to it. I'm thrilled that you're working on a stage adaptation for it, and hopefully that'll come to fruition soon.
But this discussion has been great for me, because after seeing that film, I feel the need to rehabilitate Amy.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Right. And, as far as me, I have been working for years on a Jane Eyre spinoff.
Woo! Great! So, yay!
Well, I may do something completely different for our main presentation. This is a great time to encourage people to submit to our main event, which is in November, and we will do some kind of online presentation so that way we can respectfully social distance, yet everyone can participate who wish to.
Yeah.
And we are open to all levels of artistic experience. So if you are brand new and you want to try a new art form, you are welcome here. If you are professional and you want to bring us your, you know, A-plus level, that is great too. We just want everyone to be able to express how they are relating to these pieces and our specific quotes, which are, again, CEARTS.org.
Yes, that is perfect. I love that. So we're down to like the last minute here, and I just want to thank you guys so much for joining us, and I hope you come back in 10 minutes to join us for our second session, which will be on the most dysfunctional relationships in these four novels. I can't wait. So on that note, I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to end the meeting so that we can all go get a drink of water or whatever, and then come back in 10 minutes and get talking about dysfunctional relationships.
Yay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Join us next time as we continue our workshop discussions of the romances and relationships in our four nice books this year. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.